the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
You're very welcome back to The Last Word. Danny McConnell of the Business Post sitting in for Matt Cooper. It's now time for the week trending, and joining me in studio is Sarah McGuinness, formerly of this parish and now currently political correspondent with the Irish Daily Mail, and Cathal O'Sullivan, it's assistant producer with 98FM. You're very welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having us.
Hi, Danny.
On this sunny Friday, we find ourselves stuck in here with no light and no...
Nowhere else we'd rather be.
But we've plenty to talk about. Let's start with, there was a bit of a controversy during the week about whether a president should or should not be able to speak Irish. Sarah, do you want to maybe kick us off on this one?
So basically this is something that actually erupted on TikTok, where most the best debates and the most high-minded debates take place. But there is a content creator called Aideen Fitzmaurice, and basically she came down very heavy on, she expressed this opinion whereby she thinks it would be a quote-unquote travesty to have an Irish president who is not fluent in the language. And she herself is a Gaelgore, and she kind of said that, listen, like, how can we have the person in the highest office of our state not be proficient in our native language? And some people completely disagreed with her, saying, like, why on earth does it matter? Surely we should have someone who is the best diplomat, someone who is very well regarded, a very competent person who reflects the views of everyone across Ireland. And other people kind of agreed with her in the sense that the Irish language is very special to many people, and, you know, the head of our country being able to speak it and speak it well is something that is important to them. Unfortunately, I don't think that in the debates and in the analysis of any candidates who are coming forward, the Irish language is going to play any role whatsoever.
Catherine Connolly's a strong Gaelgore.
Yeah. She is, and that will play well with the, like, Irish language community and others. But ultimately, you know, like, I don't think that it will be a massive swaying vote for the majority of the population. And people are being asked about it, don't get me wrong, because I think particularly with Catherine Connolly running, other candidates are being asked about it. Gareth Sheridan, who you had on the show yesterday, was asked about it, and he said that he is learning. So I'm sure that
Joe McHugh-esque.
So I think that will be the kind of line, but you would actually be astounded how few politicians do have a capable level.
And even the current Ciarán Cóirlear, Fiona Murphy, you know, I mean, this was an issue when, you know, Micheál Martin was accused of calling Mary Lou MacDonald a liar in the Dáil.
It is. And, like, even you can see, if you're ever at a doorstep or if someone is giving a speech, and they, most TDs will try and do attempt a passage in Irish. And
the that's just to get themselves on TG.
But the amount of them who have the phonetic spelling above, I won't name and shame, but it,
I'll go on, please do.
No, not yet. But it's something that a lot of people are important to. Personally, I would like to see a president with fluent Irish. I think it's something quite meaningful.
Would it be if you had two relatively strong candidates, you know, speaking to your, I suppose, prejudices or whatever you might call it. Like, what is they, you know, could Laratas Gaelga, would that be the deciding factor?
I might come from a family of Gaelgores. Like, my granddad was the principal and he comes from Dingle. And I think the Irish language is something that is very important. And I did very much like the fact that Michael D. Higgins was a Gaelgore and was well able to speak it. But, like, notwithstanding, Mary McAleese and Mary Robinson weren't fluent, but spoke with some level of fluency. I would like to see it. I think it would be, I think, like, with the Irish kind of rebellion, the Irish language rebellion that's happening at the moment, with the likes of NECAP, the likes of our own Louise Cantlin and stuff like that, pushing this kind of Irish rebellion amongst the, like, younger generation. It would very much be, like, you see, I saw this TikTok just come up on my feed of Aideen Fitzmaurice, and the comments were of a lot of young people saying that Catherine Connolly can speak Irish. So it'll be interesting to see, does it play a part?
And it was interesting that Angus O'Snodick, who's Sinn Féin's Irish and Gaeltacht spokesperson, requested an urgent meeting with NUI Galway, because their incoming president will be the first president, Professor David J. Byrne, who's from Newcastle in England, will not be a native Irish speaker.
And this is the first president of the University of Galway, which is Ireland's only bilingual university since 1926, who does not have a lick of Irish. And it's obviously not his fault. He comes from Newcastle in the UK. It's not his fault, but there is a question on the Oskolia Nagalieva, their administration, as to why they have not prioritised this. Now, up until 2017, they were legally obliged to have a fluent Irish-speaking president, because basically, if it's a bilingual university, they felt that the president needed to be able to conduct its business in both ways. That provision isn't there. So, like, University of Galway haven't done anything wrong by not appointing an Irish speaker, but it certainly has upset certain quarters of the...
Sure, we love to give out, don't we? As Irish people, look, we'll find any excuse to give out.
But I actually, and I'll have a piece about this in the paper tomorrow, but I was actually speaking to...
And which paper is that now, sir?
The Irish Daily Mail. But I was speaking to actually Eamon O'Queave about this during the week. Eamon O'Queave, grandson of Eamon De Valera, one-time deputy leader of Fianna Fáil, was a TD up until the last election, and... fluent Irish language speaker, and he basically raised the point that Ireland actually, under the Official Languages Act, we have a statutory obligation that the government has committed to, whereby 20% of all new recruits to the public service by 2030 need to be able to conduct their business in Irish. And he's saying, we're not going to meet that. We're going to be breaking our own law, and that is because of, I suppose, the fact that Irish isn't provided for in a lot of cases. So it's an interesting topic, I suppose, how much we kind of, not idealise it, but how much it is important to us on a matter of principle, but when it comes to actually executing it, how actually important is it?
Let's give you the view of a number of our listeners. So the head of state, says one listener, and representative of Ireland should be at least, or should at least have a working knowledge of the language. That should be a minimum requirement, says Aisling. Another listener says, I would want a competent, upstanding person to be president, not someone who speaks Irish. Let's be honest, very few people speak Irish. Most of us only have pidgin Irish, if we're honest. Isn't that the truth of it?
Yeah, I like that. Like, it's funny. Like, I was speaking with a friend of mine the other day, and he was actually just chatting, and he was like, is it the case that a guard should be able to reply to you in Irish? And I think it is. Mm. That if you speak to a guard and then are to be arrested, you could be brought down to a station, and then a guard who speaks Irish is brought to you. So I suppose if you think of it that way, I suppose one of the highest offices in the land, you should be able to have some level of fluency.
And there is that concern that because, you know, there aren't direct translations from Irish words or phrases into English, that there are slight differences of meaning, that, you know, there could be subtle emphasis difference, that if you don't have a fundamental grasp of the Irish language, you might take up you might misread or misrepresent or be misrepresented in the language that you're seeing.
Well, that was the whole basis of the argument in the Dáil between Micheál Martin and Mary Lou MacDonald, and the fact that Fiona Murphy, who doesn't have Irish, couldn't differentiate between whether he was saying she's not telling the truth or whether he called her a liar.
Yeah.
You know, I think in terms of the presidency, I think if it was a requirement in the Dáil, that would definitely be a bigger factor in terms of picking up translations in the correct way and interpreting them. For the president, I don't think it will be, because I don't think the vast majority of the Irish public would really know what a president was saying if he or she or they were giving a speech in Irish.
Given we're talking about the president, I'll ask you both this question. Gareth Sheridan's first week, good or bad?
Oh, I was at his press launch, actually. He'd make a fine opposition TD.
Really?
I'll give him that.
That's interesting, okay.
It was really interesting watching him. Whether or not he fully grasps the office of the presidency, I don't really know. Like, he was saying the most energised he was actually in the whole press launch was when he was talking about Sean Gallagher and accusing people in his circle of launching a coordinated attack against him. And when he kind of gave journalists a slap on the wrist for hectic headlines and maybe misrepresenting his character. He was actually very personable other than that. But he was saying some stuff about how he would go into the Dáil and he would start a conversation on housing. You're absolutely not allowed to do that. You would be laughed out of there. You're not allowed to do that. And a lot of it is, and he actually had a very interesting exchange about this with an Irish Times journalist, Colm Keane. And basically Colm Keane kind of put to him that, are you running on a completely populist policy platform? So, like, he was kind of like, you're saying a lot of things that sound good, but ultimately they are policy matters. You are not running for a policy position. Yeah. And it's all kind of very reminiscent of, he'd be a great speechwriter for the Social Democrats or Labour if they're looking for them.
Carl, one of his big pitches is that he's a voice for the young people of Ireland. As a young person in Ireland, Does he speak your language? Is he someone that you connect with?
Like, my first encounter with him like that was online. It was on TikTok, and I saw his launch and all this, and I was kind of like, who is this guy? Like, young people, when it comes to...
So he didn't read the Sunday Independent last week?
young people don't know who this man is, and he's coming out with almost this kind of stunned kind of performative thing of being like, I'm here, I want to be president. But like Sarah says, he's talking in a sense that he's going to change policy when he has... The fact of the matter is he can't do that. Mm. He'll be able to sign off on it, but he won't be able to do that. And I think it's kind of almost reminiscent of people who don't understand what the presidency is. And like, young people kind of want someone who'll be able to lead as opposed to someone who thinks they know what they're doing.
I think there's a huge misunderstanding of what the presidency is. Every time you ask people, like, they want them to fix the housing crisis, or they want to do something else, that's the responsibility of the government. Let's move on. Sarah, there's a story that's, you know, whether we should or shouldn't have child-free zones at sporting events. What's the background on this?
This was scandalous. So this relates to...
This is the British tennis star Emma Raducanu, who was struggling to keep her cool when a baby was being disruptive during a match.
So it was at the Cincinnati Open, and it was getting to like a very kind of pivotal point in the match, and a baby started crying. And eventually, it was the final set, and she basically turned to the chair umpire and said, "Ah, come on, this baby been crying for 10 minutes. And the umpire, you can actually hear it. There's
we actually have a clip, so we might play that clip.
It's a child.
Yeah,
do you want me to send the child out of the stadium?
Same child is crying, and as Emma Raducanu has just said, it's been crying for about 10 minutes, and clearly the parents are refusing
to continue for the moment.
To take him or her out, because they don't want to miss the tennis, do they? But...
A bit awkward for the parents, isn't it?
But, a bit awkward for the parents, it certainly is.
I think Emma Raducanu was completely within her right to ask that the baby was removed. She's playing the number one in the world, Aryna Sabalenka. And like, if you were facing the number one in the world, you'd want quiet. Tennis is one of those kind of games where you absolutely need quiet. It's almost like chess. And she was well within her right to ask for a little bit of quiet if the parents could just take her out. Like, you would never do it in a restaurant, but at a sports.
Oh, I've seen it done in a restaurant. I've seen people being dragged out of a restaurant. Sarah, is the idea of having, you know, child-free zones or these sort of uninterrupted spaces a good idea? Or, you know, was this an overreaction?
See, in general, I don't really think about it too much because I don't really have... I don't have kids at all, actually. And, I suppose I actually do love babies in general. So I'm kind of always quite happy when they're around.
Oh, wait.
I know, yeah. But, but I suppose if it's a screaming child... You see, there's an argument that many people will argue, and that is by having child-free zones, you are going to end up excluding mostly women and mothers from participating in it, because no matter how far gender equality has come in recent years, there is still a kind of an expectation, an unwritten expectation, that women will be the ones who are holding that, and therefore as the primary caregivers, which most women are, they will be therefore excluded from places. But I do think I would agree with Cathal in that this is quite an exceptional circumstance. Like, just bring the baby outside. I know you don't want to miss... I know it's the final set, and like, you want to be there just as much as they do, but when you could hear a pin drop and it's that tense, surely you can realise that you're ruining the vibe a little bit.
There is a bit of like, read the room.
Like in other places, like on a plane, I'm kind of like, you can't help it if your baby is screaming on a plane. It's not pleasant for anyone, but like, it's not the parents' fault. But in this case, I think it was maybe a lapse in judgment and slightly selfish to stay.
Yeah, it does remind me of Mass back in the day when the fathers had to take the screaming kids out the back.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I went for dinner last night and I met my friend's child for the first time. She's 6 weeks old. And the baby started to cry during dinner. And there was nothing we could do, only just sit there and rock the baby, try and get it back to sleep. Like, the food was there, it was hot, and... Yeah. My friend had to eat too, like, and a lot of people around were kind of just like, you're grand, like, it's fine, don't worry about it. But in this space, It's an exceptional circumstance.
We're just going for a break now, but a couple more texts on the presidency. A president of Ireland not speaking Irish is a crying shame. Look at any other country. Even New Zealand can speak their own language. And another one, Michael D. Higgins constantly overstepped the mark as president, interfering in foreign policy and also commenting on the government's, particularly in relation to the housing crisis. So it's a bit rich for panellists to criticise candidates for straying into this area. If they didn't stop Michael D. Higgins, who would they stop, says Andrew in Dublin. 8. We were talking before the break, guys, about, you know, child-free zones, and we've had a couple of texts come in and say, as a parent of three, I can never understand why people can't take a crying baby out of a situation. It's not fair for all involved. I was once at a theatre show and a mother had to be approached by staff to remove a baby that was crying for about 5 minutes straight. The next one is if a child was screaming and crying in a soccer match, would that be okay? No, same for tennis. It's not the child's fault. It's all the parents' fault.
I don't agree with that either.
Well, here's another one. I was at a funeral once and even the priest had to make reference to a baby crying. I'd say the baby even wanted to leave.
Yeah,
right, moving on to the next topic. Slovenian toy maker drops lawsuit against an Irish content creator. Cahill, what's this one about?
Yeah, so this is just, like, it's a bizarre story, really. But the Japanese toy maker who's behind the Slovenian kind of toys, Epoch, they have dropped a lawsuit against an Irish content creator. Her name is Thea von Engelbrechten.
Oh, that well-known Irish name.
Yes. Who's from Kildare. She, kind of in lockdown, COVID-19 in 2021, racked up around 2.5 million followers of this Sylvanian drama series she had on TikTok. So basically it was using the toys, like they're kind of little rabbits, little mice and stuff like that, to depict almost soap opera style dramas. So basically it kind of looked at themes of like divorce, murder, kind of affairs, different things like that. And for all the world, it was like a better EastEnders. And basically, in January of this year, the Sylvania drama account went quiet. It went dark, the one that this Kildare content creator was running. And it kind of meant that Epoch had taken a lawsuit against her. And they said it was copyright infringement and irreparable injury has come to the company. But the Irish content creator said, look, it was a parody. And then just this week, they dropped the case against her and both parties have paid for their like law fees and all that.
So they do actually have a sense of humour at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe they saw the good in it, but yeah. Like, it's very tongue-in-cheek. It's very, you can tell it's kind of almost satirical, but it's, I was just shocked when they took any lawsuit against her because I don't think they really had a leg to stand on.
So Sarah, for those who are not familiar, is this stop animation, or is this someone just holding up little figurines and voicing it over?
So she actually has all the gear, to be fair, like probably from her childhood, but it's like she has the Sylvanian like little figurines in their houses and like all the various sets and outfits that they come with, and she literally just, it's not insanely high quality production.
No,
she literally is just videoing them with like they're standing up in a one that I'm looking at right now. It is a little velveteen brown rabbit and a elephant. And to just give you an example of the type of storyline we're talking about here, the rabbit is telling the elephant that she is pregnant. They're presumably a couple. And the elephant is very happy. And then it just cuts to a little mouse shoved in a wardrobe. And the rabbit saying, the mouse comes out of the wardrobe. He's clearly hiding there. And the rabbit says, oh, you can come out now. And the little mouse asks, oh, did you tell him about us? So they're having an affair. The baby isn't the elephant. Like, that's the type of storyline that it is. And like, I really don't know how to explain it without a visual representation, but it's totally ridiculous.
How many people?
She has 2.5 million followers. So like,
it actually is like, it's so funny because it's so ridiculous. But I think actually this girl, Thea, was in DCU when I was in DCU at the time. So she's probably only like 23, 24 years old.
Yeah, and like you have the likes of Marc Jacobs, Kate Spade, Sephora, the makeup brand in the US, Netflix, all reaching out to her for like brand deals and to get Marc Jacobs in one of her videos, which is like any content creator there would kill for that. And now there's Sylvanian like figurines holding Marc Jacobs bags.
And as you said, just so we're clear, so Epoch, the Japanese company that first launched the Sylvanian family's range, filed a lawsuit in New York alleging copyright infringement, irreparable damage and injury to its reputation. And then in January, the accounts went quiet. It stood dark, blah, blah, blah. And ultimately, but she countersued. Yes. Ultimately, basically saying it was a parody and like this is all just a bit of crack and, you know, let's not be. And essentially, it was on the grounds of fair use of and ultimately, as you said, the claims have been dismissed without prejudice and each party have agreed to bear their own costs, expenses and attorney fees according to court documents. So it's...
Slovenian dramas lives to fight another day.
The last line of the news article about this by Yvonne Mori on RT is the best one because basically she's going back to the drawing board and she's like, right, I will move this away from the Slovenian brand. So she said that she'll do like an open call for new names for whatever they should call it. And me and Cahill were in stitches outside because one of them is a Desperate Mousewives. Desperate Mousewives.
Trans-Sylvanian drama.
Yeah, it's so funny.
Like, cancelled critters.
It's still bringing people joy, which is the main thing.
Well, and if you understood any of that conversation over the last 5 minutes, you're better than me. Sarah, let's talk about a high demand for Irish passports, including from some maybe celebrity people. There's been over 1 million applications for Irish passports in the last year.
Yeah, which is really interesting. So there was 1 million last year, and I think there's been in the region of 26,000 this year. And basically, this article in the Journal is kind of making a correlation between that and the fact that Donald Trump has taken office and that many Americans are essentially fleeing the United States because they don't want to be a part of that. So this kind of came up this week in the news because Paddy Tobin, the leader of AIM2, has basically called for, in light of the rising number of passport applications in Ireland, Irish people should be prioritised first. And now many people would have had frustrating experiences with the passport system in recent years. It was chronically under-resourced. I personally, the last time I renewed my passport, I think was 2022. I did it online. I had it within a week. I've had great experiences with it, but I know that that's not necessarily the case. And probably a couple of years ago, I would have been tearing my hair out trying to renew it. But essentially, it just kind of, you know, the fact that so many... Last year, a record number of 31,000 applicants from the US applied for passports here, which is the highest figure since 2016.
Including comedian Rosie O'Donnell.
Yeah, but she's not alone. Loads of people are fleeing. Jimmy Kimmel came out this week saying that he is looking into an Italian passport. That's obviously on the back of the Stephen Colbert show being cancelled. And there's loads more. The list was actually quite surprising. I didn't realise Ryan Gosling and his wife had... Ryan Gosling
and Eva Mendes are now... They're located in London.
Yeah.
But like... It's funny, like I just did a little look online and according to the Henley Passport Index, the Irish passport remains the third most powerful in the world, in the globe. Singapore is number one because it has access to 193 countries, but Ireland comes in at third with Denmark, Finland, France, Germany, Spain and Italy because we have free access to 189 countries around the world.
But also allows you travel, you know, the free, you know, easy access to the European Union, all that kind of stuff. What I found really interesting is Paul Lawless from AIM2 basically said there should be a hierarchy of applications to your point. You know, basically there are those in America simply applying for an Irish passport so they could frame it.
Frame it, yeah. And like, you'd have to think if this is happening, if this is the case that they are applying to frame it and they're remaining in the US, there are people out there that do genuinely need that and need that to, I suppose, reside in Ireland to move here. I think it's something around 8,800 are the number of passports that have been given out to the US citizens since 2015. So, okay, we've had 31,000 applicants just this past year, but only 8,000 since the past 10 years. So there is a kind of imaginary error there, but like you'd have to hope that the Irish people and the people who are genuinely, I suppose maybe their parents are Irish and they're genuinely hoping to move here and like live here and spend their time here, that they're being given preference when it comes to it.
Sarah, do you have any difficulty with that idea of prioritising domestic Irish, you know, residents over, say, people in the UK, the US, Asia, like that? Or do you think that the system should be, you know, first come, first serve as it normally is?
You see, I would obviously that, like, any kind of discussion about prioritizing Irish people, I'm always kind of immediately like, ooh, a bit hesitant to kind of think about this just because there has been so much pro-Irish rhetoric. But I think with the matter of passports, it's actually quite simple. I do think that, say, if you are someone who is living here, you are paying taxes to the Irish economy in some form. I do think that it's not a bad idea to have a hierarchical system. I wouldn't say that about everything, but I would say it about the passport system.
So I guess from that, you don't agree with giving the vote to people not residing in this country?
I know, I actually actually what in the presidential election, particularly in Northern Ireland, I think it's a good idea.
Tangentially, Cathal, there's an interesting story. I think Olivia Kelly did a feature on the residents of O'Connell Street and the Borzas, the Carfolas and the DeVitos, and apparently Danny DeVito related to one of them.
Yeah, a relation of Danny DeVito, which actually, like when I read the article, I saw it during the week, and it's just like, it's bizarre that they've been living there since the 1930s, these kind of three different families, and there, at one point they say there were six or seven cafes run by all these Italian families. Like, you walk down O'Connell Street, kind of our main thoroughfare, and you don't think to yourself, oh my God, there's three Italian families running the place, like, or like running, I suppose, the kind of the housing over there. But like, Danny DeVito was related to them. His branch of the family immigrated to the US, but not Ireland, changed it, therefore changed the spelling. But like, they were staying in all these, like, you recognize it's above a Cafe Nero. So like, I suppose if Danny DeVito was to now say, I want an Irish passport. It's funny.
It certainly is. And it goes to show, I suppose, that the, to your point of the currency of an Irish passport, you know, would probably transcend what we traditionally would have looked for it to be. You know what I mean? For us and for people older than me, the idea of getting out of Ireland means it was because you were forced out there because you had to leave. Whereas now people are looking to Ireland as, you know, it's a thing of prestige. It's something very valuable to have. And particularly in the wake of Brexit, we saw a huge number of, you know, high level business people in the UK, politicians, etc. I think there was a figure of like one quarter almost of the House of Commons, you know, had applied for Irish passports. You know what I mean? They're, like, these statistics were just fascinating given the strength, to your point, the strength of the Irish passport. But like, whether or not we'll see Danny DeVito and all these guys actually moving to Ireland is another matter. We literally have another minute left. Sarah, talk to us about the Garda Band. It's cost €6 million a year, and there's some concern that they're not essentially serving members of the force.
No disrespect to the journalist who wrote this article, but you know it's silly season when the Garda Band is being looked into.
One of their annual outings.
Yeah. Basically, anyway, people have just been looking into the Garda Band, and to be fair, they have racked up some bill, but also like that is since 2022, yeah. 6 million since 2022, and they're paid about an average of 67,000 a year as a salary. Yeah. It's a good wage, probably the best you're going to get as a professional musician in Ireland.
Cathal, we have about 20 seconds. Your view on the Garda Band?
Yeah, look, I love watching them at the Rosas Tralee, but I don't know if I agree with 12,500 per gig. Like, there's definitely some musicians out there who would love to be put into these kind of residential homes, nursing homes, where the Garda Band are performing. So maybe there should be a little thought put into that next time around.
Indeed. Well, listen, thank you so much for your time. Sarah McGuinness, political correspondent with the Irish Daily Mail, and Cathal O'Sullivan, assistant producer with 98FM. Thank you both very much for joining us.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.